Zen Dog Den.
The Zen Dog Den.
The Zen Dog Den.
Got it. You ready?
Yep.
This is the
Doers.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Do it.
I love that you're doing that.
I do what I do.
Conversations with creators,
innovators,
and entrepreneurs from Lancaster and the Central Pennsylvania region.
These are the people who make Central PA a great place
to live, work, and play.
Start again.
I'm Jason Mundock. Today on the program, it's Charisse Fedock, founder of the Zen Dog Den. Charisse is a certified dog trainer with the International Association of Canine Professionals, and her approach is behavioral dog training, using methods that she learned studying under the dog whisperer, Cesar Millan.
Behavioral dog training is more of a primal approach to dog training, meaning in nature, dogs absolutely correct each other and have whole conversations with one another.
That makes sense.
Right, but they're not using clickers, treats, or verbal commands.
Charisse is passionate about understanding dog psychology and the way the species naturally behaves, and helping others use this knowledge to teach their dogs to be well-behaved and respectful, both at home and on the walk. But her journey to becoming a successful dog trainer started 10 years ago, ironically on a tip from her mail carrier, suggesting that she might be interested in the Humane League.
So I called up the Humane League and I signed up for a volunteer orientation.
From dog foster volunteer to dog walker, dog sitter, and eventually dog trainer, Charisse Fedock has spent a lot of time with a lot of dogs, and in that pack, she is definitely the alpha. You can learn all about the cool stuff Charisse is doing with her furry friends online at thezendogden.com.
Cool, awesome.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Brought to you by The Candy Factory.
Co-working in Lancaster.
I am a certified dog trainer with the International Association of Canine Professionals. So yes, I have that label, but I specialize in behavior as opposed to obedience.
Let's pick that apart just a little bit.
Right? Yes, that's
behavior versus
difference.
Obedience. Mm-hmm. Talk about the difference.
So obedience training is created by humans for humans for the purpose of training animals to do what they want them to do. Okay. Usually with treats or clickers or verbal commands, something like that. Behavioral dog training is more of a primal approach to dog training, meaning in nature, dogs absolutely correct each other and have whole conversations with one another.
That makes sense.
Right, but they're not using clickers, treats, or verbal commands. There's nothing wrong with either approach. They're just different.
So I guess what I would traditionally understand would be the
obedience.
Obedience.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because that's kind of the classic obedient school.
Yes, and that's where I started. But then when I did meet Cesar Millan and trained under him, he is a dog behaviorist, and he talks all about dog psychology, how he grew up on a farm in Mexico, and there were just feral dog packs roaming all over the farm that he grew up on, and he just was fascinated observing the pack dynamics.
Wow.
Why do dogs do what they do? And he had a funny story at the time. He said he started watching Rin Tin Tin and Lassie. So he thought all the dogs in America were magical, that they could do all these amazing tricks. He had no idea that they were trained to do those things until he got to the U.S. And
wow! So I really want to dig into that part of your journey.
Yeah.
But before we do that, let's set up what one of your clients could expect,
right?
If they engaged with you in this behavioral training,
right? A lot of clients come to me who have already gone through a fair amount of obedience training with their dogs, and maybe they just aren't getting where they want to be in terms of, you know, stopping the dog from jumping on people, stopping the dog from barking, stopping the dog from pulling on the leash, things like that. So they'll come to me and say, you know, I'm done with the treats. I don't want the dog working for the treats anymore. I would like the dog working out of respect for me as a being of higher authority. And that's exactly what behavioral training is. In other words, dogs are pack animals, and they operate with order and hierarchy in the pack. We are not, as humans, pack animals. So it's a different concept for us to think about, you know, leadership in that way. But yes, when people come to me, we talk about a primal approach to dog training, meaning we're not going to use clickers, treats, and verbal commands. We're going to use the dog's language, which is pressure and release.
That's fascinating.
The pressure is the discipline, and the release of pressure is the reward.
So let's just say I have this dog and I hear about your services and I engage with you. What does that engagement actually look like?
I do not have a facility. I do in-home training.
Okay.
And the reason is because we want to train the dog in an area of little to no distraction. If you take a dog to a facility where there's lots of excitement going on. Can you train the dog to sit on command with the reward of a treat? Yes. Will you ever be able to get that dog to be calm and respectful in that environment? Probably not. So that's why we train in-house. That's also usually where people have the most challenges with their dogs. So I get to see, oh, okay, you're having trouble here. Okay, let's address this.
So there's an authenticity to the environment, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely.
And they can continue that training with the owner.
Yes.
Right through, and then you can come back and sort of pick up where you left off and see where things, how things are going. That's really cool.
Yes.
That's a cool approach.
Yes.
What's the reason that I would choose
behavioral training?
What would be the reasoning for that?
Typically what happens with obedience training is because you're speaking directly to the dog and you're using treats, both of those things create excitement in a dog's brain. So obedience training usually teaches to a very excited state of mind.
Okay.
Behavioral dog training, because we're using a more primal approach, we're not speaking directly to the dog and we're not using treats. We're not using these things that typically create excitement in the brain. We are actually attempting to elicit a calmer and more respectful dog. We're trying to turn behaviors off like barking, jumping, counter surfing, without using commands or treats, and at the same time keeping the dog calm and respectful. It's not that we're trying to build robots, because of course these are living beings, but if we can get a very excited dog to calm down, then we've made progress.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a big difference between a work dog,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I'm a farmer, or I have some, or like a drug sniffing dog, right? Those are functioning
dogs.
Work mm-hmm. dogs versus a family pet dog. Do you find that the behavioral approach works maybe better in the home environment?
Yes. I actually have some clients that do different things with their dogs. I have one client that has a search and rescue dog. And so when her dog is working, her dog is working. He has a harness on. He's sniffing the ground. He's tracking. He's scented items. He's working. But then this owner wanted to also have a dog who she could just take on a walk around the neighborhood without him working and scenting and tracking and all of those good things. So she hired me to just help her to take her dog on a nice walk. It's all about building that relationship between the owner and her dog. It's almost a teacher-student relationship, ideally. That's what we're always shooting for is, you know, a good teacher loves her students, but there are still rules, right?
Right. This is fascinating, right? The idea that we humanize a dog.
True.
Cartoons have done that, right? The pop culture does that.
Right.
We speak for the dog, and we impose human emotions on the dog. But from your experience and your expertise, like what's the reality that's going on there?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. Is like these dogs are hanging out in a pack.
Right.
They're not like value judging each other or gossiping.
Right.
So, you know, what does that dynamic really look like between those dogs?
Yeah. It's called anthropomorphism.
Okay.
And that's when we as humans put our emotions on dogs, and we tell stories. Oh, my dog is doing this because yesterday this happened and next week this is going to happen and all of this stuff. What I usually try to express to people is that dogs are actually very simple animals. I think it's one of the reasons why we love them so much, and one of the reasons why of all the animals in the world, it's man's best friend.
Right.
Is because they do want to please us, but they're also very simple. They live in the moment. They don't hold grudges, things like that. They don't tell themselves long stories. That doesn't mean they haven't maybe been through something horrible, but they don't usually hang on to it. They're just living in the moment.
Got it. So that's a very different approach from
approach.
I think a lot of humans do strive for that.
Yes.
Especially through Eastern thought, right?
Right.
But dogs are there.
Right. And that's where kind of the Zen part comes in, at least a little bit for me, is, you know, I do try to live in the moment when I'm not, you know, working or spending time with my family. When I'm taking my dogs on a walk, I just listen to my feet hitting the ground.
Right.
Just being mindful of living in the moment and not letting my brain go everywhere. I don't know. I guess I consider that kind of Zen.
Absolutely.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Visit us online at coworkinginlancaster.com.
Home of the Candy Factory, a co-working space in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
So how did you get into this?
I went to college, graduated, thought about going to law school, ended up in sales.
Okay.
So I ended up in pharmaceutical sales for many years. Met my husband. We decided that one of us would stay home if we were lucky enough to have children, And so we figured whoever's making the least amount of money can stay home with the children. So I stayed home and I was very thankful to be a stay-at-home mom. Then once my kids were in school full-time, I thought, okay, I got to get busy doing something because otherwise I'm just going to spend a whole lot of money on the internet and that's not going to be any good for anybody.
There's no good outcome at the other end of that.
There's no good outcome of that. So I actually talked to my mail carrier and she said, hey, I just started volunteering down at the Humane League of Lancaster. This was in 2009. And I said, oh, isn't it so sad? And she said, no, it's great. I thought, oh, okay. So I called up the Humane League and I signed up for a volunteer orientation. And I thought, oh, I'll be the only one in there. I go down there. This is misperception number two.
Right.
I walk in. It's standing room only. There's tons of people from our community standing in this room wanting to volunteer for our local shelter, which was just amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So I, at the end of the orientation, you could sign up as a volunteer for different things. And most of the people were signing up for walking the dogs on a weekly basis. No one was in the line for fostering dogs. So I thought, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So I signed up to start fostering dogs for the Humane League. Ended up over a six-year period, about 40-plus dogs, 17 kittens, you know, that our family fostered. But a lot of the dogs that I was given by my foster coordinator at the Humane League were dogs with food aggression.
Okay.
And so I also, my first foster dog was a puppy mill survivor. That was a learning experience. I had, you know, I fostered dogs that were taken from a hoarding situation. So lots of behavioral stuff was going on with these dogs. And I felt like it was my mission for myself to help these dogs become more adoptable.
Okay. Right? So I gotta pause you because first of all, 40 dogs, six, I have heart palpitations.
Yeah,
right
I bet.
There's that. And then the other thing is, did you have dogs at the time? Like,
yes.
Were you a dog fan?
Yes. Okay. I had two or three dogs at any given time while fostering. And sometimes the foster dogs would get along with my dogs, which was great, and sometimes not. So then we'd have to do what I call compartmentalizing. So I'd have the foster dog in one room and my dogs in another room. And yeah.
That must have been wild.
Yeah, and my whole family was, you know,
everybody was into it.
Yeah, my husband, my two kids. Yeah.
Okay. How old were your kids then? Were they?
Oh, then they were 4 and 6 when I started. Yeah, they were 4 and 6, and my son was bitten once. My daughter was bitten once. Yeah, no, I mean,
I'm just picturing this chaotic scene. You know, here comes the van, and Charisse opens the door, and 20 dogs come running out.
It was a learning experience, I will tell you that.
Okay, so you're fostering these dogs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What's the next step then to get to Zen Dog Den?
So then I started walking dogs. I started my own dog walking business and my own pet sitting business. So now I'm fostering dogs, I'm pet sitting, I'm dog walking, I'm doing this all together. And at one point I did have someone working for me and she said, you know, you really should get into dog training. She said, it's just the natural next step.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, all right, I'll have to check that out. Plus I had been doing dog training at the Humane League because there's a lovely trainer who volunteered her free time to train us as volunteers at the Humane League. Yes. So we learned about basic obedience so that when I was then at the Humane League, when I was then walking dogs there on a weekly basis, we could just take them through the basics of obedience, sit, stay, come, all that good stuff. Again, all in an effort to make the dogs more adoptable and attractive to prospective adopters.
That makes sense.
And then I started doing it privately at people's homes with people's dogs. And then I reached out to, this is interesting, because I reached out to a local obedience trainer here in Lancaster. And I had heard that this person was the best in the business in this particular field. So called this person, said, I'd love to take you out for coffee. I would love to learn more about this. You know, you're the best of the best. And everything was lovely on the phone, and I was told to call back next week. So I called back the next week, and then I was told to call back in a month. And this went on until I realized I'm being put off. So that's okay. So then I thought to myself, okay, so this person is the best in this area. Okay, I'm not going to pursue that anymore. Who's the best dog trainer that I can think of off the top of my head? And I thought of Cesar Millan.
Okay.
And I thought, there's no way that Cesar Millan trains trainers. Well, I did a Google search, and lo and behold, he trains trainers. And so I immediately signed up for that first training with Caesar, and that changed my whole
life. Where was that located?
He has two dog psychology centers. One's in Fort Lauderdale, so that's the one I went to because it's closer. And he has his main dog psychology center in California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it was in the winter and you could
get it. It was January.
That's
yes.
Awesome.
Yes. It was in January.
I'm going to go down
awesome.
To Fort Lauderdale.
I know, right?
Hang out with Caesar.
Dogs. Yeah. Yes.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And was this your first toe dip into behavioral training?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
That must have been mind-blowing.
It was. I was completely, all the lights went on. It all made sense. It was the aha moment. And mostly what he talked about was dog psychology. In other words, let's get to know this species and let's build a better relationship with this animal. And then let's ask him or her, you know, to do certain things or not do certain things.
It seems so obvious.
Right. Well, and most people, and I find myself, I was in this category as well. 27 odd years ago when I had my first dog, I was, you know, all my clients are loving, caring people. So I was loving, caring towards my dog, but I was loving, caring towards him almost as if he was a furry little human.
Yes.
Right. So what I have learned over the years is that dogs share 99.9% of their same DNA with a wild wolf to the point that they can procreate with wolves. And that was my aha moment where I thought, okay, let me learn more about this canine because this animal is more like a wolf than it is like me. And it's, I felt personally that it was disrespectful for me to say, okay, my dog is doing this behavior and then putting that through a filter of human psychology as opposed to saying, no, wait, my dog is doing this because he's a dog.
Right.
And this is what dogs do.
This is what dogs do.
Yeah.
What was the trajectory like after your time with Caesar to now?
It's a slow grind because you're also learning as you go. So I figured out over time that behavioral dog training or what goes on in a natural dog pack is very much like what goes on in a classroom in a school.
That's the analogy.
Right.
That's what the thing that lets people then understand
yes.
how to approach that.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Teacher
yeah.
versus student. And then there's classroom time where you have to be calm and respectful. And then there's recess, where you can have fun and less rules. So with your dog, I look at it during the course of a day, you know, are we in the classroom right now? When I'm walking my dogs, they're in the classroom. When they're running around my fenced in backyard, they're at recess, right?
Got it.
So they, for a balanced mindset, there should be a little bit of both.
This is the Doers Podcast, conversations with
creators, innovators, and entrepreneurs
from all around Central Pennsylvania.
I'm Jason Mundock, talking today with Charisse Fedock, founder of the Zen Dog Den, a behavioral dog training service based here in Lancaster. Well, you know, what's an example of a turnaround that you saw? You have to be going into these places with these just insane dogs, right? You, like, talk me through one of those stories.
Okay. Well, I will tell you my most recent one that, again, it's all about the people.
Okay.
It's all about the people doing the work, understanding the program. My job is to make sure that I explain the program and show the techniques to the point where the human really understands it, because if they don't understand it, they can't apply it.
Got it.
And if they can't apply it, then it's not going to work.
Right.
But like anything else in life, what you put into it is what you get out of it. Okay. So this
is a commitment.
Oh, it's definitely a commitment.
Yeah.
Dog training is hard work. Whether you're doing obedience training or behavioral training, it's work.
Got it.
Yeah. So I have this new client and she's just lovely. You can just tell that she is completely committed. She has a German short hair pointer puppy. And this puppy is just bounces off walls. Okay. I think 4 months old or, you know, and it's a working sporting breed. So this is an active dog. Within 1 week, when I first met this puppy's jumping all over me, you know, just crazy. Within 1 week when I went back to meet with her, drastic improvement, you know, way less jumping, just a calmer, more respectful dog. So that's been very exciting to go through. I'm trying to think off the top of my head some other ones. There's really so many. Years ago, this woman who is a massage therapist,
uh-huh.
she had a puppy and she went through the training program. And then she said, you know, I want to be able to take my dog to work with me. And that's a unique dog. Just for
they
the record.
They can go to work.
Yes. Just for the record, it's like finding a four-leaf clover. You know, it's really a unique dog that can go to work and be okay with people, other dogs, things like that. But it does happen and it's a beautiful thing when it does happen.
Yeah, sure.
So having said that, she worked so well with this dog that she got to the point where she can massage a person while this dog is on what we call step 3, but is place command in obedience training. And She spends the entire day with the dog, but he's calm and respectful. She doesn't have to use commands. She doesn't have to use treats. But this dog knows who's in charge, and she's speaking his language.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, it really is very cool to see it.
What has this work done for you? What's been the impact for your life?
Well, I would say that I can make my own schedule, so that's wonderful. I love working with dogs. That's wonderful. I love working with people, so I love people as much as I love dogs, so that's a good thing. I saw the difference in my dogs when I started applying the program to my dogs first and living in a calmer, more respectful state. That's where I was like, well, I got to share this with other people because this stuff works. I didn't invent it.
Right.
It just, between dog psychology and the 5-step program, it works to make create a calmer, more respectful dog, but you have to understand it and you have to apply it, you know, but it definitely works.
It actually begs an interesting question, mm-hmm. and that is, you know, I'm assuming your dogs weren't puppies.
Right.
And so can you apply this to a dog at a later age?
Yes. My oldest dog that went through the program was 13.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's that myth that
the old dog a new trick.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, because you're speaking their language and it makes sense to them.
Sure.
Now, does it take an older dog some time because they've been practicing unwanted behaviors and getting a payoff for many, many years? Is it, you know, you're basically telling a dog, hey, what's been working for you for 13 years? We're going to just kind of switch it up a bit. You know, we're not going to do that anymore. And most dogs are like, okay.
Because it makes sense to them inherently, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's because they want to please us.
Yeah. What's the future look like for Zen Dog Den?
Yes, well, it's a good question. I'm currently rolling out e-collar training. So 90% of my clients get where they want to be with just the understanding the basics of dog psychology in combination with completing the 5-step program and then applying that to their daily lives with their dogs. Not to mention I have free services like my Saturday morning pack walks, and I have a closed group on Facebook where I share videos of my own dogs. So 90% of my clients are totally fine with all of that.
So you're basically signing up for these five sessions. Mm-hmm. You get a few extra bonuses mm-hmm. in there.
Absolutely.
As well. And that's pretty much the engagement then.
Yes.
And at that point, you should have the tools.
Yes.
To turn this dog into super dog.
Yes. Cool but dog. I never leave. I always tell my clients, I'm in your back pocket for the life of this dog. So there's never a time that you can't call me, text me, email me during training, 6 months from now, a year from now, 10 years
That's
from
awesome.
Now. Right. So it's constant support, and some people take advantage of it and some don't, but I'm always happy to talk dogs. So I'm always happy to help people.
Right.
And like I said, then the closed group on Facebook is helpful for people. The pack walks, we've been running them for 3.5
Tell
years.
Tell me about the pack walks. That's interesting.
We've been running them for 3.5 years at Overlook Park now. It's every Saturday morning that I'm in town. So that's a lot of Saturdays that I've been there. And I just invite all my clients who have gone through the program to come out. It's practice. It's free of charge. No RSVP. And if you want to practice your leash handling skills in the presence of lots of distractions, like 20 other dogs and people and, you know, all the distractions that go on at a regular park, right? All we're asking our dogs, we don't need our dogs to entertain anybody or wave their paw or, you know, spin in a circle. We just want them to practice calm and respectful behavior in the face of all of these distractions.
Sure.
Right.
And when you get 20 dogs together like that,
yeah.
I mean, is it like a pack? I mean, they're just like, all right, mm-hmm. this is what we do.
Yes. It depends on the dog. Some dogs have to stay back a little bit. Maybe they have a little reactivity, so that's okay. You know, I always tell my clients, this pack walk is for you, not for me. I show up so I can help, but this practice is for you to take advantage of. So if your dog is not comfortable walking right next to another dog, no problem. Take 10 steps back, take 20 steps back.
Sure.
You just need to work under threshold. You need to work where your dog is comfortable. And then over time, you can get closer or try to get closer. But yeah, most of the dogs walk side by side, you know, there's no leash to leash interactions, meaning nobody's coming nose to nose,
right?
Because they can be very risky and explosive, but they're socializing and exposed to each other in a controlled manner.
That's really cool.
Keeps everybody safe.
So I completely hijacked your future. So
oh no, not at all.
So you were getting ready to talk about, you know, the kind of where you're going after this offering or what could be next.
Right. So 90% of my clients are happy with what, and to be honest with you, I'm happy with what I have going on with my dogs with the 5-step program and the dog psychology. But I do have that extra 10% that want something more. They want to layer in some e-collar training. And e-collar training is remote collar training. It is a stimulation. It is a shock, but it is a very low-level shock. It's used as a communication device, almost like a tap on the shoulder from far away. It's not a complete aversive. It's okay. Really more of a... Now, if you talk about invisible fence, that's a great tool to prevent your dogs from getting off your property and getting hit by a car, God forbid. But those stimulations are set higher.
I see.
Than what a training, what an e-collar training tool is set at. It's much, much lower.
Is it for the purpose of, is it just a training tool?
Yeah, it's a training tool and you control it with a remote. Uh-huh. And what you first usually do is teach the dog to, you know, a solid recall. So you make sure that that dog comes back to you. So it was probably originally used by hunters who sent their dogs off and, you know, there's game and there's other dogs and there's people. There's all these distractions and they need to make sure that their dog comes back to them.
Got it.
So they would use an e-collar. But it's used for a lot more than just hunting these days. People who want to take their dogs off leash. In the state of Pennsylvania, it's not legal to take your dog off leash off your property. So
is that right?
Mm-hmm. Right. There's Pennsylvania leash laws. So what we talk about with the e-collar is not so much off leash training, because in a lot of states they do off leash training and that's wonderful. But in, you know, what I would teach my clients is more of a solid recall and maybe correcting for jumping and
sure.
things like that, that 90% of people can't seem to get a handle on, right? Which I understand.
Right, right.
So they want to layer in something
extra. They just want to go that one extra step.
Right, they want to go that one extra step.
This is a fascinating journey.
Yes, it sure is.
And is you must, I mean, do you know how many dogs like that you hang out with? Like it's got to be.
It's a lot.
It's got to be, it's like hundreds.
It is, thousands? It's hundreds. It might be in the thousands at this point. I'll be honest with you. It probably is.
Yeah.
I just never have, you know.
You never
sat
really
down and
sat
counted
down.
Everything up. But yeah, there's a lot and I'm thankful for all of them. It's been a wonderful journey and each dog is different. Each person is different. And it's just been very fulfilling and wonderful for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you all the best with
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking a few minutes to
My
talk.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And kind of explain this, I don't know, interesting perspective.
Yes.
The Doers Podcast is produced by Jason Mundock at the Candy Factory,
a co-working space located in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Find links and show notes for this podcast and all of our episodes online
at the Candy Factory website,
coworkinginlancaster.com.
Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And keep on doing.
Keep on doing.
Keep on doing.
What you love to do.
This is going to be such a success.
Hey friends, Jason Mundock here. All of the voices in our intro and outro are actually Candy Factory members.
Wait, what?
It's a great community, and yes, we have a good time because frankly, work doesn't have to suck. And we all know that working alone does suck. So if you're a freelancer, entrepreneur, remote worker, or even a student here in Central PA, check out coworkinginlancaster.com and consider joining us at the Candy Factory, an awesome co-working space in Lancaster. Starting at just $50 a month.
Oh, yeah.
That's for a community membership. You can meet other doers in a super creative and collaborative space, tap into business resources to help you get your job done efficiently, and learn all kinds of new and inspiring stuff through our network of really smart people, i.e. our members and guests. We even have a podcast club for members who want to make their own.
Wink, wink.
There's a membership level for everyone, so don't hesitate. Check it all out at coworkinginlancaster.com. Do it.
Do it.